Hello, everyone. My name's Chris. I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank Mark and Tracy for asking me to drive an hour and 50 minutes to come to your meeting. It's always an honor and a privilege to do that. I have my sobriety date. By the grace of God, if I stay sober till March 30th of this year, I'll have 38 years of sobriety. I haven't made it there yet, but, hold it until March 30th. I have a sponsor named Tom Bouchard, and I'm going to say his last name because this is an AA meeting. I have a home group. Technically, I call it the Pacific Group on Wednesday nights, but I was just telling Mark my favorite meeting is the Monday night Chip of a Book Study meeting, Men's Stag. It's like a fantastic meeting. We get about 40 guys, and we have maybe a half a dozen guys that have less than 10 years of sobriety that go to that meeting. We get some new guys, and when they come in, they just love that meeting, and we just talk about, we read through the big book, and, we just share on every paragraph and every sentence and stuff. And I think, I've been going to that meeting since 2009, and I think we've been through the big book like three times since then. That's how our men's stag is. It's very slow, we read fast, but, we share really slow. I'm going to, hopefully I'll say something tonight. I'm not an authority on Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not a circuit speaker, and spoiler alert, I hope I'm never a speaker, a circuit speaker. I'm not from California originally. I'm from the state of Michigan. I was born and raised in Detroit, Michigan. My parents were Polish immigrants. My parents are Polish. My parents' parents are immigrants from Poland. And if you know anything about Polish people, they love to smoke, they love to drink, and they love to eat. And, I just grew up that way. I'm not one of those kids, I go to a lot of meetings, and a lot of the people share from the podium that, they felt different when they were young. I never felt that way. I just thought growing up the way I did, it was just normal. I'll tell you, the kind of person my drinking and using is kind of based on just bad luck, is the way I look at it. I kind of consider myself the luckiest unlucky guy on the planet. Just to give you basically how my life has been, even in my sobriety. Okay, when I was really young, I was about 6 or 7 years old, and I was at the park, and this one of the, the kids in the neighborhood kind of bullied me, and he was punching me and slapping me, and I was so scared because I couldn't fight back, because I just knew if I did, the beating was just gonna, it was just gonna continue, and I was just really scared. But when everything was said and done with, I really didn't even cry much, but I was really angry. I was just angry because this guy was just picking on me. And so, I don't know, he must have been probably 11 years old. I think I was like 6 or 7. And he was like, seemed like he was like 30 or 40 yards out, after he got done, roughing me up. And I looked around and I picked up this golf ball size rock, and I just heaved it at him. And, I just watched that thing and it hit him right in the back of the head, and I was lucky that it happened, but I was really unlucky because, it's like I knew I was in trouble, and that's just kind of how, my best thinking, has always gotten me into trouble. I started drinking, my parents, when I was younger, my recollection is, when I was, 5 years old, If I ever got sick, I got an upset stomach, you know, how my parents medicated me, they would give me a warm glass of water with some whiskey in it. And I kind of remember, you know, vaguely that it would go down, warm my stomach, and, you know, and I would feel better the next day. And, but, you know, I didn't sit there and say to myself, God, that's really good. You know, I want another one. I actually hated alcohol growing up. My parents, you know, would kind of put alcohol in a lot of the things that I, in order to, you know, medicate me for certain things. And I just hated the taste of it. You know, when they had parties and stuff, my dad would go, hey, you know, here, take a sip or something, you know, and I didn't want to have anything to do with it. But, you know, that was when I was really young. And I started drinking when I was 12. That I remember my first actual alcoholic drink was Boone's Farm apple wine. And you know, if you're 12 and you drink a half a bottle of that stuff, what you're going to do is you're gonna puke, right? I mean, I don't know about anybody else, but I did. And you're not going to have scrambled eggs or eggs sunny side up the next day. You're definitely not going to eat that. And you know, and just that alone, it wasn't the alcohol that made me want to drink, you know, have another drink. I think it was the effect that alcohol had on me, which caused me to want to have another drink, you know. And, you know, my friends were saying, you know, God, man, you drank so much last night and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, you were really funny and you did this and you did that. And I had no recollection of what I did. anyways, so I started drinking when I was 12. And then as I was getting older, I would continue to drink, but then I started getting into other mind-altering chemicals, you know, stuff that would affect me from the neck up. And that progressed until I was 26, you know, when I decided to get sober. But just to give you a little... So what happened was how I got to California... I worked for United Parcel Service in Detroit, and one of my friends was getting married, and he asked me to stand up in the wedding, and there was a young blonde lady that he had me stand up with, and she was from California, and, you know, she liked to drink and use, and, you know, we got along great. Unfortunately, though, she was engaged to get married to somebody out here, but, you know, with my very good luck that I have, you know, she kind of got attached to me, and the next thing you know, she got disengaged, and I ended up moving out here to be with her, and I brought all my, you know, my head and my best thinking and stuff, and. You know, I met some people out here, and, you know, my drinking and using just, you know, continued to get worse, to the point where, you know, we ended up getting married, and we ended up getting a divorce. But kind of step back a little bit. Her dad worked for an aerospace company in Canoga Park, Rocketdyne, I'll just say it, because I don't work there anymore. I got a job there when I was 21, and you know, that helped, you know, that started my career in California. So what ended up happening was we ended up getting married, and because of my drinking and using, we ended up getting a divorce. And when we were going through this divorce, I decided to go visit my employee assistance representative at this company, Rocketdyne. And this lady, Elaine Phillips, who became my Eskimo for Alcoholics Anonymous, I sat down and told her I was having these marital problems, and what she told me was, she said, you know, maybe if you stop drinking and using, maybe your life will get better, and, you know, Kim will come back, and, you know, all this good stuff. And I was really kind of taken back by that, because I was like, how would she know that I was drinking and using? Well, unbeknownst to me, apparently my wife saw her before I went to visit her and explained to her the whole situation. So, anyways, Elaine said, hey, if you want some help or whatever, just come back. And, you know, I thought, I was really embarrassed, and I just kind of walked out, and I was thinking to myself, oh my gosh, you know, how does she know this, and what am I going to do? Anyways, my drinking and using just continued to get worse, and eventually I went to see her, and she said, hey, we can get you into a treatment program. And I said, okay. So she got me into the West, at that time, it was the Humana West Hills Hospital Care Unit. And my first sobriety date was August 5th, 1986. And I went in there, spent 31 days in there. But, you know, one of the things that really stood out for me when I was there was the very first night I was there, a lot of the inpatient, because it was an inpatient program, a lot of the people there that were inpatient, they got to go to meetings outside. It was actually in the medical building across the parking lot. But while we were there, while I was there, I was just watching TV, waiting for those guys to get back, and they had some kind of emergency, and I walked out to see what the problem was, and they were wheeling this guy on a gurney, like down a hall, and they were pumping his chest. And, you know, I never saw what yellow jaundice was, you know, like when your kidneys back up, but this guy was like yellow. I mean, it was like frightening. I thought, God, what does that guy got, right? And, you know, the next day when we were in prayer session in the morning, it was explained to us that guy passed away, that his kidneys failed because, you know, of his drinking. And, you know, they basically, you know, kind of the director of the care unit at that time basically used him as an example of, you know, what alcohol could do to you. And, you know, I was thinking to myself, God, I hope I never get like that. Well, I ended up spending the 31 days there. When I got out, I was 4 months sober. I was actually, when I was in the care unit, they, for whatever reason, because I don't know any better, but they sent me to NA and CA meetings. And I did that for 4 months. And then Christmas of 86, I flew back to visit my parents. And while I was at my cousin's house, you know, and I was hadn't had anything to drink or use for 4 months, you know, my luck turned out that my cousin came up to me and said, hey, here's a shot and a beer. And I did the shot and I did the beer. And, you know, my mom looked at me because she knew that, you know, what I was kind of going through. And she said, afterwards, she said, hey, are you supposed to do that? And I said, you know, my problem is more with, like, you know, meth and all this other stuff. You know, drinking's okay. And and it wasn't, obviously, because, you know, when I came back, you know, I said, I'm just going to drink and I'm not going to use. And before I knew it, you know, I was using again. And and in February of 87, one of the stipulations of my going into the first rehab program was that I had to do random urinalysis tests at my company in order to make sure that I was clean from everything. And eventually what happened was it was a random day, you know, again, my luck. You know, it just so happened that the night before I was drinking and using, and the next day they would test me, and I tested positive. They were going to fire me from my job, but Elaine said, you know, hey, he had a slip, you know, let's kind of work with them. And so they put me into an outpatient program, a 20-day outpatient program. And what ended up happening was I stayed sober for 12 days during that program, and, you know, and then I started drinking and using and going to rehab. And talk about insanity. It's like, I don't know, would you guys, if you were drinking and using, would you go to rehab? I did, you know. anyways, so when that was all said and over, when that was all said and done with, I just said, hey, you know, I got past that. And of course, you know, I'm just drinking and using. And then on March 27th of 1987, actually the weekend before that, there was a softball tournament and I was out with my buddies and we partied. And then on that following Monday, you know, my luck ran out. I showed up at work. They wanted to do a random urinalysis test. You know, I got tested. And then on Thursday of that week, was March 27th, Elaine basically said, you know, hey, you know, you're going to be terminated from work. You know, just wanted to let you know ahead of time. And so I ended up, again, my best thinking, I told my boss, hey, I got some problems, I got to leave. And then I showed up on Friday, the day after I got told by Elaine, thinking that, you know, hey, I haven't had anything to drink or use the whole night. I showed up on Friday thinking that things were going to go away. And security came up to my desk and, you know, I knew these guys and they said, hey, you know, are you Chris Machuga? And I'm like, well, you guys know who I am, right? I've been working here for, you know, 7 years or some odd. And they walked me out. And, like, all my coworkers just saw me get walked out. And everybody knew why, right? They just said, you know, he just can't stay sober. So when they walked me out, they gave me a couple paychecks. The director, the medical director at Rocketdyne basically said, you know, I wish you luck and, you know, I hope you get some help. And I said, okay. And, you know, I just left and I went on a 4-day binge and I ended up, you know, at the care unit again at West Hills Hospital at 2:30 in the morning on March 30th. And I was like, I weighed like 153 pounds. I hadn't eaten anything in for like 3 days, and I could barely talk. But what I did have in my wallet was this care unit gold card that they gave me the first time I was in. And, you know, they said, don't leave home without it. And so I did. I didn't. And so I had it in my wallet, and I threw it on the emergency room desk. They called the care unit upstairs. This one of the nurses, her name was Rhonda. She came down, and I remembered her because she was the night nurse. And she asked me a bunch of questions, and I was just nodding my head. And she said, "Come on, let's go upstairs." And so as soon as we got off the elevator, she walks me straight into the men's restroom. She turns the light on, and she puts my face in the mirror, and she goes, "Look at yourself." And I didn't even recognize myself hardly. You know, I was like, oh, my God, my face was kind of sunken in and stuff. And so she ended up taking me back to the nurse's station, and they called the director of the care unit at that time, a guy named Al Jeffries. And he said, well, we can't do anything until the morning. And so when the morning came around, he came in, and I'd been sitting there for a while, and he said, they called up my insurance company, and lucky me, because on April 1st, my insurance would have ran out, and they said, yeah, we could put him in for another 31 days. And so that was on March 30th, right? And so they said, you know, do you need to get anything from home? And I said, yeah. And they said, are you going to come back? And I said, yeah. And so I went home and got some stuff, and I came back and spent my 31 days in there. Now, when I was in the care unit the first time, this lady, Elaine, she had given me the phone number of a guy named Chuck Andreessen, who she said, call this guy. He he works at Rocketdyne, he's sober, and he might be a good sponsor for you. And I never called him. And when I went into the outpatient program, she gave me his number, and I never called the guy. And so this time she gave me his phone number, and I said, okay, I'll call him. So when I was in the care unit, I had some change. They had a pay phone. I put some change in. I gave him a call, and, we talked, and he told me a little bit about himself, and I kind of explained to him what my situation was. And he said, well, why don't you come over and let's talk about it? Let's talk about sobriety and stuff. And I said, well, I'm in the care unit. I won't get out for 30 days. And he said, well, call me when you get out. And he hung up on me. And I thought to myself, well, that's kind of rude. And I figured maybe I got disconnected. So I called him back and I go, hey, not sure exactly what happened, but we got cut off. And he said, no, you're in the care unit, right? And I said, yeah. He goes, you're not going to be out for 31 days, right? And I said, yeah. Call me when you get out. And he hung up on me. And I was like, wow, And she wants me to ask this guy to be my sponsor. I'm like, I don't know about that. Anyways, when I got out, I called him up. He said, come on over to my house. It was a Saturday morning, and he had some sober people over, and they were having a party, birthday party or something. I can't even remember what it was. But he explained to me that he had been in the Midnight Mission a couple times, and he had 5 years of sobriety. And he explained to me about, his story. And he said, these are the things that I did to stay sober. I got a sponsor. I got a big book. I read the big book, from cover to cover in 90 days. I went to a meeting every day. I got commitments at all my meetings. I call my sponsor every day. I didn't make any decisions based on self. And he said, if you can do that, he said, I'll work with you. And I asked him to be my sponsor. And he said, okay, your first meeting's tonight. And so meet us at, Life's in Session in Van Nuys at this church, St. Paul's Church on Lindley. and I did. And, I showed up and a bunch of people came up to me and said hello. And they all said, are you new? And, I said, well, I got like 33 days of sobriety, And they said, oh, you're pretty new then. Anyways, I got hooked up with those guys, and it started my process in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I was unemployed, and I was trying to find work, and Chuck's, one of the first things he told me to do was file for unemployment, which I did. And when I did that, I got a letter from Rocketdyne basically saying, hey, we fired you. You can't collect unemployment. We're not going to pay you unemployment. And so I explained that to Chuck, and he said, just do it, and see what the unemployment office does. And so they called a hearing. They had like this hearing, right? It wasn't like a judge or anything. But so I showed up. I sat by this table, and there was a person on the end, and then there was representatives from Rocketdyne, and they said, we fired them, this and that and the other thing. And Chuck told me, he said, just tell them you got a sponsor, you're going to do the best that you can, you're going to meetings and stuff, and then just turn it over to God. And so that's what I did, explain that to him. And like 3 weeks later, I got approved for unemployment. So I was like, okay, so I have some money in my pocket, and one of the things that did was it, kind of made me think that, maybe Alcoholics Anonymous isn't a bad thing, right? Because I was, I'll tell you something. I was unemployed for, the first 6 months of my sobriety. And I was trying to collect, I was collecting, unemployment. But, it was just like one of those things. It was like a miracle. And kind of leaning forward, I ended up getting a couple of jobs over the next couple of years, as my sponsor would have it, because you know I make decisions based on self. Even today, I do it sometimes, not as much as I used to. But I was living in Woodland Hills, and talk about driving, right? An hour and 50 minutes to come to a meeting to speak, which I love to do, just letting you guys know that. I applied for a job in Redondo Beach at this company called TRW, and they said, we'll make you an offer. And I accepted it without talking to my sponsor about it, right? And so I was so happy I went and I told him about it. And he said, "You mean to tell me you're going to drive an hour and a half to Redondo Beach every morning and 2 hours back, you know, and you got meetings to go to and all this stuff?" And again, you know, it's, you know, I'm the luckiest unlucky guy on the planet, right? It's just like, that's just how my life was going. I ended up working there for about a year, and then I got laid off. And then Chuck at that time said, "I think it's time for you to reapply at Rocketdyne." So I reapplied. Well, first I told him, I said, "Hey, you know, the medical director said, you know, I'll never get hired back. They don't hire back people that they fire for drinking and using." And Chuck said, "Just don't worry about it, you know, just apply." And so what ended up happening was this lady, Elaine, called me up and she said, if you get an interview, you have to tell the person what happened at Rocketdyne, you know, that you got fired for drinking and using and what you're going through. And if they accept you as an employee, if they say, hey, we'll make you an offer anyways, then we'll bring you back. And so on October 2nd, 1989, one of the guys made me an offer, and I was the first employee to ever get hired back at Rocketdyne after being fired for drinking and using. And, you know, to me, you know, that was like a blessing. You know, I had bad mouthing, kind of bashed AA for the first 2 years of my sobriety, right? I mean, if you're an alcoholic like me, I'm like saying the Serenity Prayer 100 times a day, every day for the, you know, first 2 years of my sobriety. Anyways, so I got rehired. And then, you know, one of the things that Chuck, when we were sitting on his front lawn, when I asked him to be my sponsor, take that back. After I got done reading the big book, we went through the 12 and 12, and we started doing the steps. And then I ended up doing my fourth step. And then when I did my fifth step, he said, "I want you to make a list of the things that you want out of life. You know, like, what is it that you want that you haven't been able to achieve?" And so, you know, it was getting a college degree. It was getting, you know, married again. It was buying a house. It was going on vacation, you know, saving money up for retirement. And and I gave it to him. He read all that stuff, and he said, "Okay, well, let's work on it," you know. And so, you know, I got my job back, and then, you know, I talked to him about, you know, hey, you know, what are we going to do with this list? And so he explained to me how to save money. He explained to me how not to get into debt. He explained to me how to put money away, how much money I should put in my retirement plan and stuff like that. And so I just kind of followed his direction. And so that worked out great because, you know, on June 30th of 2023, I retired from that, from Rocketdyne with, you know, they bridged the 7 years, 4 months that I previously had with the current time that from October 2nd of 1989 up until June 30th of 2023. And, you know, I retired with 41 years with the company, you know, and I could do that. And, so that, you know, that was like, that's what following sponsor direction did for me. The other thing too was, I haven't gotten married yet again. Not sure that that's going to happen, though, now that I've been sober for 37 years. But I was able to buy a house. And but, you know, there's a lot of things that happened to me in Alcoholics Anonymous just by following direction, going to meetings, helping other people out, you know. One of the reasons why I'm out here is not so much the hour and 50-minute drive, but, you know, it's I have to give back what was freely given to me because I can't keep what I can't keep it. I can't, you know, because if I don't give back, you know, my spirituality is just going to shrink and it's just really not going to do me any good. And I'll probably end up drinking and using again. But, you know, just a couple things. You know, Chuck, I'll tell you what Alcoholics Anonymous, I grew up Catholic. My parents were Catholic, right? I mean, Polish people are very strange. On Thanksgiving, like my mom would, my grandmother, she would take this raw turkey to church and they would like bless it, right? And I'm like, you know, when I was really young, you know, because my grandmother died when I was like 9 years old or something like that. But I was telling my mom or asking my mom, I'm like, what the hell, you know, what's grandma doing? And she said, they're seasoning the turkey. And I'm like, okay. You know, hey, I don't know any better, you know. Turkey always turned out great on Thanksgiving as far as I was concerned. But, you know, I grew up Catholic, but once I got to a certain maturity, a certain age, you know, I didn't really bag so much on religion and you know, going to church and all that stuff. But I just wasn't into it anymore, you know. I think what happened was, and it says in the 12 and 12, you know, I believed in God, but I didn't think that God believed in me, you know. And so what's great about Alcoholics Anonymous, at least what my sponsor taught me, was the spiritual aspect, you know, and I live by that today, you know. And I guess where I'm going with this is that when I had a little over 5 years of sobriety, or when I turned five, you know, there were really, I didn't feel like my life was like exploding like it did in, you know, the first couple of years of my sobriety. I just kind of felt like it was really stagnant. And so Chuck said, you know, he said, you need to find God. And I thought, you know, hey, I'm getting on my knees every morning and every evening. I'm praying to God. I'm doing all these things. You know, how can I not be connected to God? And he said, trust me, you know, you need to find God. Well, so he said, why don't you make me your higher power and, you know, let me turn your will and your life over to me and I'll take care of it. And it made sense to me because so far things were going good. I had 5 years of sobriety. And what ended up happening was in December of that year, there was a rumor that he had been drinking. And he was drinking. And so the group of guys that he was sponsoring, they said, you know, we're going to put him in the hospital, but they won't accept him until he's got 72 hours of sobriety, so we got to make sure he doesn't drink. And I remember on day one when I was talking to him, he told me, you know, in sobriety, you cannot get anybody drunk and you can't get anybody sober. And he told me that, you know, he had been through the Midnight Mission twice, and he said that, you know, I have another drunk in me, but I don't think I have another sobriety in me. And so so this one night that I volunteered to watch him, it was an early morning watch. I saw him come out of his living room, and when I saw him, you know, the big book says, for us to drink is to die. And when I saw him, I said, he's not going to make it. And I asked him, I said, what do you want? He said, I just want a Coke. So I got him a Coke, and I said a prayer for him. And, you know, that was in December of 92, and, like, I don't know, it was September of the following year, he ended up, you know, dying in a hotel room from, you know, alcohol poisoning. But from that moment on, when I saw that, I my spirituality kicked into overdrive because I said, you know what, I don't want to end up like that guy. You know, I was going like, he looks really, really terrible. And so I ended up getting a different sponsor. And all my friends were like, actually, when he was drinking, a lot of his babies were kept him as a sponsor, and they were trying to get me to stay with him because they said, you know, he may be drunk, but he gives really good direction, you know. And I'm like, did he say, hey, meet me at the bar at 8 o'clock tonight, you know, because that would be good direction, you know. But anyways, I got another sponsor, a guy named Claude Binion, who's not around. He sponsored me for like the next 7.5 years, and he was totally opposite of Chuck. Chuck was like a neo-Nazi guy, Clancy guy, and Claude was like, you know, hey, you know, if you're in a relationship, you know, and you're not getting sex, don't call me up crying because you're not getting sex, you know. But if you feel like drinking because you ain't getting sex, then call me. And I was like, I don't know that that's going to happen, but okay, I got the message. And anyways, so Claude was my sponsor for the next 7.5 years. And then he was diagnosed with esophageal cancer or something. He passed away. I ended up getting this guy named John Perrick, who ended up being my sponsor for the next 10 years. That was in December of 99 till August of 2009. And then he moved to Laguna Woods. And I ended up getting this guy, Tom Bouchard, who became my sponsor. He's the guy who started the Monday Night Chip of a Book Study meeting. And he's been my sponsor. He's a great guy. He's always telling me to take contrary action. And if you don't know what that means, don't do what you want to do, right? Do the opposite. And I hate that, you know. I have 37 years of sobriety, and, you know, there are times where I hate my sponsor, right? Because I'll talk to him about a relationship problem that I have, and he'll say something like, oh, but you're just playing the victim. You know, you're playing the victim. And I'm like thinking to myself, wait a minute, didn't you just hear what I said? You know, she's not doing what I want her to do. You know? And he's like, go home and think about it, you know. You know, and then I guess to step back a little bit further, you know, just a little bit, I ended up, after 5 years of sobriety, I went back to school. I got a college degree. I got my bachelor of science degree, and then I went on and got a couple more degrees. And, you know, it was very fulfilling for me. It was, you know, if you're an alcoholic like me, you're obsessive compulsive. So 1 degree's, you know, I was talking to Chris, right? 1S is not enough. Or 1S is too many and 5's not enough, right? So, anyways, like 1 degree's too many and 3's not enough, right? But it was for me. And so there's a lot of things that Alcoholics Anonymous has given to me. I've sponsored a few guys, you know, in my tenure, you know, being sober and what have you. And some of those guys went on and got different sponsors or moved out of state. And I sponsor a guy right now who knew my fourth sponsor, this guy named John Perrick. And John called me up and said, hey, you know, do you think, you know, you might want to sponsor this guy, or he needs a sponsor. Could you talk to him? And I did. And that was during COVID. And, you know, he was a Zoom guy, and, you know, we talked on the phone. We did his fourth step, his inventory and all that stuff, basically walked through the big book and all that stuff, you know, during COVID. And, you know, he'll have 5 years of sobriety on April 7th. And, you know, so, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous, while I, And I'll admit it, you know, I'm not always happy. I'm not always a happy guy in AA, you know. I sometimes defy the program. But in the end, you know, my best thinking has always got me into trouble. You know, my best thinking, you know, just, you know, like, you know, coming out here today, you know, it's like the guy in front of me is not moving on the red light, so I beep my horn, you know, and then he beeps his horn, you know, and I'm like thinking to myself, dude, you know, you're supposed to make a left-hand turn, you know, I mean, and I start to get alcoholic, you know, I don't go into road rage or anything, because, you know, with my luck, you know, somebody will throw a rock and hit me in the back of the head, but, you know, kudos to AA, kudos to, you know, sponsorship, you know, guys who, you know, make you do things that you don't want to do, because, you know, left to my own devices, I'm just a walking zombie, you know, I'm just a guy with bad luck. So I want to thank Mark again and Tracy again for inviting me out, and, you know, God bless. I hope you guys have a great weekend.